again. It's almost identical to what happens with a parabolic dish. If you've got a parabolic dish working correctly with a good feed on and the dish itself has the right accuracy, and you want to double the gain of that parabolic dish that previously was working well, you have no choice but to increase the diameter of that parabolic dish. It needs more area. Gain is area. Whenever you double the gain as a hard number, 3 dB increase, you must double the area. In the case of a dish or a horn, you see the doubling of area with your eye real easily. The equivalent of that with a well-tuned Yagi's is the boom must be longer. As the boom is longer and is properly tuned, it is the equivalent of a bigger diameter dish. I wonder if that's what you were asking. Back to you, Mel.
Basically, if you take a Yagi, maybe I'm thinking more on the HF, HF at Yagi. If you take the Yagi that, say, is designed for optimum FR and also gain and SWR, do you sacrifice, would you sacrifice something in there? In other words, would you be sacrificing, in other words, as you do this optimizing, do you sacrifice something in the process, Dick? In other words, would you be sacrificing forward gain by trying to maximize, say, the FNR and the SWR?
Yeah, I think you're really asking, are there trade-offs? And the answer is not a clear yes or no. If you're smart enough to realize, on the assumption that I'm right, if you're smart enough to realize that optimum gain occurs with the first side lobe 17 dB down, second side lobe 22 dB down, third side lobe 28 dB down. If you've tuned for that and got maximum gain, we'll simultaneously get a very desirable front-to-back ratio. It may not be the best, but you'll get a very desirable front-to-back ratio if you're smart enough. And here's an experiment that I've done that's a mind-blower. Take a long Yagi, which in my old days used to be 19 elements, tune it up real well, measure the forward gain, measure the front-to-back ratio of, we'll say, 18, 20 dB, which to me is good enough, and then while that Yagi is operating, yank the reflector completely off of it. Common sense would lead you to believe the front-to-back ratio is going to go to hell in a handbasket, and the forward gain is going to really go to pot. Take that long Yagi and you completely remove the reflector. You'll lose 2 or 3 tenths of a dB of forward gain. Your front-to-back ratio that used to be 20 dB just became 17 dB. You'll say, what the hell's going on here? That dipole is radiating like a banshee. Half of the energy coming out of that dipole is in the back hemisphere. There's no reflector back there to reflect that power forward. All of it's being lost. How come the front-to-back ratio changed by a few dB and the forward gain only changed by a couple of tenths of a dB? That's opposite of common sense. You suddenly realize that that great big long director string is one great big magnifying glass that when you're receiving, in this case it's easier to see what's happening when you're receiving. When you're receiving a great big chunk of energy out of space, it's that great big large diameter magnifying glass, and it all gets focused down to the driven element. A little bit of that energy misses the driven element, would have continued going back further, hit the reflector, and get re-reflected forward, and the driven element gets a second crack at it. If you've done a real good job of tuning that director string, the vast majority of that captured energy, when it's receiving, lands on the driven element, sticks, and goes down the feed line. Very little of it is left over to pass the driven element and go into the reflector area. So what is a Yagi really doing? It's a great big refractive optic. It is a refractor. And the word repeater, timeout, cancel. In the world of very high gain antennas, the highest antennas in the world are optical telescopes because they run at hundreds of thousands of wavelengths in diameter. And they've got minuscule beam widths and tremendous gain. 100 dB of gain is easy out of an optical telescope. The Mount Palomar has got 128 dB of gain. So in the world of great big antennas, optical telescopes, they fall into two categories, refractors and reflectors. A parabolic dish as a microwave antenna is a reflector. A long boom Yagi is a refractor. It's got a great big forward aperture lens to it. And the reflector is not doing what you think it's doing. It helps, but there are people who would say, boy, you've destroyed that antenna if you take off the reflector. I've done it. And if anybody who's got a computer modeling program, and if the computer modeling program has enough fidelity, you can take a real good long boom Yagi design that you know and respect, and people have built, and it works, and it's got lots of history. And you remodel it with the reflector taken away, and you'll be very surprised at how little impact it has. Now, when it comes to your original question, where are the compromises? If you want to, you can compromise forward gain by a couple of dB and knock down the side lobe levels below the minus 17, which I say is optimum. And Mr. Seebeck, W4RNANK, I think it is. Anyhow, Mr. Seebeck has a bunch of articles in which he's knocked the side lobe levels down to all minus 20 and minus 25. And he thinks that's desirable because people make the mistake of thinking that the side lobes contain wasted energy. Good common sense, dead wrong. When the side lobes are the right level, they are not wasted energy, even though they look like it. K2KUY in the group, K2IW in the TechNet.
Okay, let me boil this down a little bit. This is K2KUY. If we design an antenna, a Yagi, for maximum gain, are we going to be sacrificing SWR and bandwidth? In other words, is that one of the trade-offs, looking for maximum gain? Are we going to lose? In other words, if I was looking for an antenna, overall antenna, would I be better off to sacrifice some of the gain so that I have more bandwidth and more lower SWR? There is most likely, there has to be a trade-off between gain, designing for forward gain, and your bandwidth and your SWR. I don't think they can run in conjunction. In other words, you can't, as you get to a point with your forward gain increasing, I would assume that your bandwidth and your SWR are going to change. Am I correct? Over.
This good common sense, no. And for years and years, decades, people were positive that all long boom Yagis have a gain bandwidth product, very similar to a parameter you've got for operational amplifiers. They assume that whatever you do to make the gain higher, by making the boom longer and adding more directors, that you're really making a filter that is more and more narrow. Not true. A good Yagi will have something like 3 or 4% bandwidth at the 2-to-1 standing wave ratio points. You can achieve that whether it is a 13, a 20, a 30, or a 50 element Yagi. You can achieve the same bandwidth. That's a mind blower. Because people believed in the old days, and that was part of the mistake they were making of deciding that there's a certain length of director, and once you decide on that, just keep them the same length, keep them the same spacing, and keep adding more of them. And they, under those crazy assumptions, they definitely saw a law of diminishing returns. You go beyond a certain length, the gain doesn't improve anymore, and even starts going back down again. You get what's called fallback. But with the modern day designs, with the right velocity profile that follows the Gunter-Hock, what he calls Mipple curve, which I think means mean curve in German, the mean design, series of designs, and his designs are extremely forgiving. You can take his 22-element Yagi, and you decide you only want to build 16 elements of it, and you make essentially no changes except locking off the forward 8 elements, and it works, and you get 98% of the performance you would have gotten if you had completely optimized the antenna with only 16 elements. They're very forgiving designs. And almost nothing happens to the VizWa bandwidth. when it comes to your favorite design frequency, no matter what the Yagi design is, at that favorite frequency, you can always make the Vizwa perfect. 50.000 ohm and no reactants. And now as you change in frequency, yes, you're going to develop some reactants. But well-tuned Yagis will give you a reasonable percentage of bandwidth no matter what you do with good designs. And so when you make the design longer and you make the gain higher, do you make the bandwidth more narrow? With good designs, the answer is almost no. When I say almost no, if you had a certain bandwidth for a 16-element Yagi and you made it a 30-element Yagi, you're going to end up with 90% of the same bandwidth, 95%. It comes down a little bit, but nothing like you would expect if you assume that it has a gain bandwidth product. It's a weird mixture of things that make common sense and things that don't make common sense. As you're tuning those elements, the length of the elements is fairly critical. At 432, you better have them accurate to the nearest 16th of an inch or the nearest 32nd of an inch. That's a critical dimension. The diameter of the elements is very critical. If the guy used 3/16 diameter aluminum tubing and you want to use 8-inch diameter tubing, that's a very different design. I mean, rods for the elements, that's a very different design. That's critical. When it comes to the spacing between the elements, you can be wrong by an inch or two. And as long as it's not an accumulative error, if it's only a random error, you'll see almost no difference in the performance. So when it comes to the length of the element, you'd like a 32nd of an inch at 432 megs. When it comes to the position of the element, you can move it by an inch and not much happens. When it comes to the tilt of the element, you'd like them all to be in the same plane, and you can jockey them back and forth 10, 20, 30 degrees, and you would assume all hell's going to break loose. Nothing happens. So when it comes to the tilt of the element, and you look down the boom of the Yagi, it can be ugly as all hell and work like a charm. The boom itself can have waves in it and can have a whole lot of sag in it. And it looks ugly. It'll work like a charm. It's an unusual antenna. K2KEY, KQIW on the tech down.
Oh boy, this is K2KEY. Alright, let me see if I can boil this question down a little different then. Let's say we have a FR at the certain frequency we tune the Yagi, and it has a 20 dB front to rear, an FR of 20 dB. We start tuning off this frequency. The SWR starts to go up. The front to rear, the FR, drop off in proportion to the SWR rise as we move off the frequency. Dick, over.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with this one. And now there's no clear answer, and I'll show you why. If I tuned a Yagi for the best forward gain, and then without making any substantial change in forward gain, I then do a little bit further perturbation tweaking to get the best front-to-back ratio. With a little bit of care, you can make the front-to-back ratio 30 decibels. But there's a catch. And the catch is, if you took a balloon that was partially inflated and you set your reference axis in the center of the balloon, that balloon represents the pattern of an isotropic antenna, an omnidirectional antenna. If I then poke my finger into the back of the balloon, I can get a very sharp notch at one angle that's very deep, but go a couple of degrees off of that notch, and I don't have very much front-to-back ratio anymore. So when it comes to the pattern of the front-to-back ratio, is it true for only 1 or 2 degrees at the 180-degree point in the pattern? Or can I go 5 or 10 degrees to either side without it raising precipitously? And that's just when you're scanning the E-plane. What's happening to the H-plane? So when it comes to tuning front-to-back ratio, there's a zillion ways you can tune it. I can make a very deep notch over a very narrow number of degrees of angle. Or I can try to minimize the back hemisphere, or I can try to minimize the back lobe plus or minus 20 degrees in azimuth and 20 degrees in elevation. Those are three different tunings. Common sense would lead you to believe that if you make the back lobe as weak as possible, you're going to take all the energy that would have gone back there, you reflect it forward, and you're going to get maximum forward gain. Good common sense. Wrong. If the antenna is going to be aimed up straight in the air because you're doing moon bounce, and you want the best gain to temperature ratio, yeah, you want the whole back hemisphere of the antenna to be as low as possible. And that's a difficult tuning operation. Very few people, if anybody, has used any of the computer modeling programs to optimize gain to temperature ratio yet. Day will come. For the time being, that is such a difficult phenomenon to maximize at the same time that you're maximizing forward gain, that you're way ahead of the game to start off with very...
repeater, timeout, cancel.
You're ahead of the game to start off with very good design Yagis, build a whole lot of them together as a phased array, spread a whole lot of screening on the ground so the back lobes are looking into the screening, which is reflecting cold sky. Now you're going to get a real good front-to-back ratio, or you're going to get a real good temperature-wise, real good gain-to-temperature ratio. You're going to have the lowest degrees Kelvin antenna when it's aimed at the moon, and you'll get the best possible moon bounce signal-to-noise ratio with a good low-noise preamp. So there are ways of maximizing or minimizing the back hemisphere of the antenna. That's what you're really getting at here. Now, why do you do that? You either want to minimize the back hemisphere because you want the best gain to temperature ratio, or you think you're going to be operating in a crowded band with a whole lot of QRM, and you want all the guys in the back lobes of the antenna to disappear. You've got to be careful with that one. There's a hell of a lot of times in the heat of battle of a contest, my 432 array of 304 elements was aimed up at Boston, and I'm working the guys in Boston like they're going out of style. Some of the back lobes and side lobes of that array were picking up strong signals from Philadelphia. At first you would say they're QRM. Suddenly I'm realizing in the back lobes and the side lobes, I'm hearing some of the guys that only get on the 432 band for a couple of minutes, and then they go to other bands. Because I'm hearing them in the back lobes, I swung the antenna toward them and worked them. If you could buy an antenna that had no back lobes, would you use it? Well, I'd like to have a switch that I could flip that makes the back lobes disappear. So periodically I know what's going on back there. Because it takes me 30 seconds to swing the whole darn antenna. If I could flip a switch and get there in 1 second, there are times when that's real fun. And the Stepper Yagi allows you to do that. KQKEY, KQIW on the TechNet.
Roger, this is Kate. Hi, Dee. Yes, this is K2KEY. The point is, that's what I'm starting to bring out with getting to the Step IR. They came up with a optimum design of front to rear, SWR, and gain. And they said that to achieve this, they aimed for approximately a 20 dB. In other words, by readjusting their elements going from frequency to frequency, they said they can achieve over the band for that antenna, particularly if you bought one, you know, for 20 meters or whatever it is, it'll achieve over the 20 meter band. It'll maintain 20 dBs of front to rear over the entire band, Dick. So I thought that what they're doing is they picked out this 20 dB because I thought that maybe this was the best compromise between gain and SWR, and that's how they, why arbitrarily did they say 20 dBs? Now they have that specification on all their Yagis, Dick, over.
Yeah, the Stepper IR Yagis are a 3 or 4 element design, and one of the designs covers 20 meters through 6 meters. And the good news is that with those Stepper motors on the directors, driven element, and reflector, he's got complete control of the electrical length of every one of those elements. These are a copper tape with little holes in the center, and there's a sprocket and a stepper motor that will step through those inside of those fiberglass tubes of the each of those elements, you can thoroughly adjust with very fine adjustment the length of those elements. And that gives you a lot of freedom. You can electronically steer the antenna forward, electronically steer it rearward, steer it for best front to back ratio, steer it for particular viswa. The one thing he doesn't have is he's got his elements at a fixed position on the boom. If he had one more variable of being able to jockey the elements in position, wow, he wouldn't get as much increase in performance as the extra dollars would create. He's already at the law of diminishing returns, but that would be a fascinating antenna. So he's got a darn nice antenna there. And except for some early reliability problems in the early production run, the people who own them seem to be very happy with them. And so with a three or four element design, without a doubt, some of these things are a compromise. But you give a good designer with a good computer modeling program 16, 20, 30, and 40 elements to work with, most of this doesn't have to be a compromise. You could almost have it all at the same time. You could have a darn good front-to-back ratio. 20 dB to me is a darn good front-to-back ratio. And you can have it, that front-to-back ratio over a considerable number of degrees of back lobe as an L. You could have a rather nice viswa bandwidth, and you could have a rather nice gain over a 3 or 4% bandwidth. Good side lobe levels over most of that bandwidth. So people used to think Yagi's had a gain bandwidth ratio, gain bandwidth product. That was a compromise. Not true. And they used to think that there was a front-to-back ratio bandwidth product. Not true. As long as you've got enough variables to play with. And even within 3 or 4 element Yagi's, you're eventually going to be hearing about other ways you can tune those 3 or 4 elements to take some of what are currently compromises and remove most of those compromises. You ain't seen nothing yet, Mel. K2KUY, K2IWM, the tech bed.
W2VL, repeater, system.
Okay, well, what I was curious, how did they arrive at that 20 dB front to rear? I mean, is that a standard in the industry? Is it a standard in a formula that they specify 20 dBs on the system, and it goes from different models and all? Why is the why was this arbitrary, or what would be the reason that there must be a scientific reason or something that they specify 20 dBs to get their front to rear over?
Yep, I see where you're going with that one. Another good question. If you're doing a very sloppy design of Yagi's, it would be hard for you to make the front-to-back ratio any worse than 10 dB. So you'd have to do something dumb and cascade 2 or 3 errors to make the front-to-back worse than 10 dB. See, you almost got that for free if you got a Yagi. If you do a super good tuning job, you can make the front-to-back 30 dB, but it's going to be over a very narrow number of degrees of azimuth and elevation. It's almost useless. With good designs, 18 to 20 dB of front to back, you can get it over a considerable number of degrees, and it gives you most of the benefit you're looking for. Take a good design with a good number of degrees of front to back of 18 to 20 dB, and if you could tweak that to make the front to back ratio super beyond that point, would not pick up any amount of forward gain worth writing home about. You're not going to increase the gain. When it comes to rejecting QRM coming from the wrong direction, 20 dB is plenty. As long as the guy isn't running a California kilowatt one block away from your house. In that case, you'd like to have 60 and you can't get it. You better use electronic nulling techniques, electronic beamforming techniques. There you can get it. But even if you do get it, you better make sure the wind isn't blowing, because if the antenna swings back and forth 0.2 degrees, you're going to lose it. Unless you've got some very fast electronic circuit that readjusts accordingly. And there are networks that can do that. But they're expensive. Elaborate. So 18 to 20 dB is a very nice compromise number. It's a lot better than a very sloppy design. but it's not so hell-bent for leather like the 30dB design, where, yeah, you get it, but you get it over such a small number of degrees, you can't really use it. So for a bunch of reasons, it's a darn nice compromise, number of dB, of front to back. Back to you, Mel.
The reason I question it is I know somebody's got that Stepper IR, and his question was, he called them up, and he says that he notices that if you go to, you can do a manual adjustment, you know, instead of, normally it's hooked to this box, this computer box that they give you, that does all the adjustment of the elements for that particular frequency, but you can do it manually, you can do a manual adjustment. And he says, but if you go to the manual adjustment, he says, it seems like you can peak more forward gain, but as soon as you push the button on the box, it readjusts it back. So he questioned them as to what is going on, and they said that because if you go to maximum forward gain on the antenna, you will degrade the SWR and the bandwidth. That sound plausible? Over.
Not quite. When you properly program that control box for the Stepper IR Yagi, you can have it form the optimum design for each of your favorite frequencies. And you tell it what frequency you're on, and it jumps to that that stored data and adjusts the elements accordingly. There is a way you're allowed to reprogram it. If in your particular location, when that antenna is on your mast, on your tower, in front of your tree, and it's on top of your particular building, you may discover that a minor variation in the length of the director, reflector, driven element, whatever, gives you something in performance that you like. I'm almost positive there's a way you can lock that in for each one of your favorite frequencies. And then in the future, when you go to that frequency, you get that design immediately. And there's probably even a way you can make a computer control cable go between your rig and the control box for the Stepper IR so that it does that automatically when you spin the dial to QSY. You may have to dig into the microprocessor and open up some of the normal functions to do it, but I think it's there. K2KEY, K2IW on the TechNet.
According to them, what they said is if you go to manual adjustments on it and you run it that way, it deteriorates the performance of the antenna. That's what I questioned. And I said, what do they mean by deteriorated? They said, well, they said, if you're at maximum forward gain, make sure I get the words exactly the way he said it. He said, if you get it, in other words, for maximum forward gain, the SWR and bandwidth suffer somewhat on the antenna, and that's why they built this compensation system into the antenna system, Dick, over.
Yeah, the salesman he's talking to has that as a general story for simplicity. I don't think it's true. When it comes to only three or four elements, which by my standards is a very short Yagi, the total number of variables you got to play with in order to make the maximum bandwidth versus the minimum bandwidth, and we're probably talking about 2-to-1 standing wave ratio bandwidth, you've got very little variables in your hand. The worst design and the best design, one's going to have a VizWAP bandwidth of 200 KC, and the other one's 220 KC. Yeah, one you call optimum and one you call terrible. The percentage of difference ain't that great. There's just not enough high-Q material there, if you know what I mean. Each of those elements, your one or two directors, and your one reflector, and the one driven element, are already fairly heavily coupled to each other, fairly well-loaded, and therefore don't have an extremely high native Q by which you can do these magic things of getting fancy bandwidth, beamwidth, gains, front to backs, and whatever. So they've chosen a good middle design that they programmed into it, and they recommend you use it. And if you go to manual control beyond that, you can make a minor improvement of one of those parameters. But it's not going to be night and day. That's my belief. That's my belief from all the Yagi tuning I've done over the years. Now, I'll admit I haven't owned a Stefan IR. There's a slim possibility something else funny is going on there, but I doubt it. Back to you, Mel. KQLIW.
Roger, because that's why I mentioned the 20 dB front to rear. If you go to manual, you can adjust it. He says where it comes up to about 22 dB front to rear. But as soon as he says you go to the back to the automatic position or automatic tuning of this device, it drops to 20 dB front to rear, and they said that's optimum. As soon as you go above 20 dB front to rear, you begin to sacrifice something there, and I figured that there must be a magic formula that says something about 20 dB for maybe for is it number of elements or whatever, or spacing on a boom. Is this, in other words, is this a magic number, 20 dB? Dick, over.
No, there's no real magic of 20. And you can get beyond that if you have complete freedom of element position as well as element length. You can get beyond that. But does it really buy you anything? I mean, it's nice to go on 20 meters and brag about the fact that the general design for a stepper IR has 20 dB, and I've manually tuned mine, and I'm getting 22. That means the guy that's directly 180 degrees away from the main lobe, in the middle of the back lobe, it used to be, that QRM used to be 20 down, and it's now 22 down. On your S meter, you're not even going to see that difference. So we're into academicness here. We're really gilding the lily. We're shining up something that's already shiny. We're not gaining much. Common sense would lead you to believe that I've went from 20 to 22 dB down, that I've got 2 dB more energy to work with, therefore I'm going to get 2 dB forward gain. No way in hell. 20 dB down is 1% of the power. 22 dB down is 1.001% of the power. Very little difference. And if you take all that extra power, I'm being joking here, and you apply it to the forward lobe, you think you're going to measure a significant difference in the forward lobe? No way. dBs are not linear. Convert it to power to figure out what's going on. Because you've made a 2 dB change in the front to rear, absolutely, positively, does not mean you've got anything even close to a 2 dB change in forward gain. You've probably made 0.005 dB change in forward gain. Without very precise laboratory test equipment, you could not measure the difference in forward gain. So why should you tune very carefully at each individual frequency to take the 20 and make it 22? It gives you bragging rights. It doesn't give you anything else worth fighting for. Back to you, Mel. K2LIW.
Yeah, it's getting late, so I was just thinking of one thing. I meant to ask you this a number of times, Dick. You know, we got on Yagis, and all of a sudden it just popped back into my mind. K1FO, 31-element Yagi. If I wanted to reproduce that, I mean, if it could, does the formulation, everything fit that? Could I reproduce, say, the 432, 31-element antenna, reproduce it for 14 megahertz? I mean, if, of course, it was, you know, mechanically possible. Because I could see the boom would get extremely long. But would that fit? In other words, can I use the modeling program of his 31-element 432 Yagi and use that to design a 14 megahertz long boom 20-meter antenna? Would it fit? In other words, is the mathematics, everything else, will it fit, Dick, or is something going to happen?
It's going to fit like a charm. If you scale every single dimension, let me wait till the static goes away. If you scale every single dimension, proportion to wavelength, you get the exact same performance. Gain, front to back, forward beamwidth, E-plane, H-plane, side lobe levels, everything's the same with one very slight exception, resistivity of elements. You may have to go to silverplating. There are people who have taken a good 20-meter Yagi design, scaled it all the way up to 10 gigahertz by scaling every single dimension. They got the exact same performance. You scale every dimension, you'll get the exact same performance, with the slight exception that when you go up to super high frequencies, you now have got directors that are so small in diameter, the resistivity of the copper gives you a minor effect, a slight difference. You ain't going anywhere near that far, don't worry about it. So when you build the 10 gig equivalent, you have to make sure you've got nice, shiny, buffed silver plating on all the elements. But with that exception, everything scales if you scale it with wavelength. That's the magic of antennas. That's the non-magic of building scale models of wind tunnel airplanes. The air doesn't scale, even though everything else does. But the ether, the air around an antenna, is so close to a vacuum as far as dielectric constant is concerned that everything scales. Now, let me drop for a second. Fred was discussing earlier this guy in Japan. There's at least more than one guy in Japan. One of the guys in Japan has a Yagi on top of a four-story apartment building that he owns. The Yagi is five elements, full space, full length, 80-meter rotatable Yagi, 180 feet of boom. When you see that photograph of a man standing on this lattice work, that's the boom. It looks like a self-standing tower. He's standing on this lattice work of the boom, and the man is hard to pick out from the picture because he's so small compared to the antenna. Full five-element Yagi on 80 meters. That guy owns the band. He's the first to open the band and the last to close it down. And he's got a boom in signal. He took some good five-element Yagi design, and he scaled it all the way down to 80 meters, and it's running. K2KEY, K2RIW, let's check that.
The time?
Okay, real good, to K2KEY. Yeah, I know, I've seen pictures of it. In fact, I know a few people that have worked them on 80 meters, and I don't know if I've ever heard them on there, but yeah, I can imagine that. I saw that tower that he used as the boom. That was how they installed that. They must have had cranes and everything in the mechanical, and the mechanics on this thing must be humongous, you know, and the rotating system. I don't know how it don't turn. The wind got a hold of it, don't turn the whole building around. Jeez, amazing. All right, very good. We better let go. It's getting close to midnight. I think they shut the repeater down pretty soon. So it is so interesting, this whole discussion on antennas. I can go on indefinitely with so many ideas, and, you know, and there's a lot of... you know, I could say a lot of folk tale on antennas and things that people have tried, and you know, and other ideas that just not possible, and others that are misnomers. Oh, so many misnomers about antennas that you could write a book just on that alone. So, all right, listen, we'll catch you next week. Everybody, have a great Hanukkah if you're celebrating the holidays, and we'll look to do it again next week. And thank you all for those emails. I try again to answer them as best to my ability, but I can only do so much. Back to Dick for any final comments. K2RIW in the group. This is K2KEY.
Very fine, Mel. I'm going to re-quote what Mel said a little bit, and that is, write us as many emails as you want. We cannot promise you'll get an answer. Each person writing thinks he's the only person writing. 98% of the time, that ain't true. And the question you pose in your head may be very clear, but you may not be giving us enough information. And what Mel and I will do is we'll take these emails and boil them down to a common denominator, and if it's got a common subject to it, we'll bring it up on the TechNet. 73, you all, be kind to each other. And one final comment, Mel. When it comes to Yagis, you ain't seen nothing yet. I'm involved in a couple of more patents on antennas right now. We think we've got some brand new designs. Bye bye, you all. 73. K2LAW, TechNet Landmark. We're clear.
K2RAW, W8YY. I've been listening to your net for the past 2.5 hours. Fascinating. Have a good night, Dick.
Just think of all the time you just wasted, Joe, listening to all this jazz. You could have been out there building some real hardware.
Well, I was actually working, so I couldn't really get on the radio. I had a chance to listen, but really not get on a talk, but it was fascinating anyway, as usual.
A little bit curious. I mailed you a rambling email today. Did it strike you crazy, or some of it almost sensible?
Say that again?
I sent you an email today. It's kind of a long, rambling email. Do you think it's way far left of center, or do you think some of it is almost on target?
Oh, gee, I wouldn't know that until I get home. I've been working since 3:30. I sent that email this morning, and I haven't been near a computer that has access to the internet until I get back home, so that'll be another half hour or so.
Okay, no big hurry. It'll wait. Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Okay, 737, good evening. WHOYY, I'm going to clear on my UH uplink here also.
Good night, Dick, N2MB. I didn't break in tonight, but I have a whole lot of stuff I'm going to bother you with next week on Foursquare in 10 and 9 here, and some of them I think I might be able to implement next week, N2MB.
Yes, I remember he built some very rugged antennas, doesn't he?
Use TL136.5.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think you don't have a PL on. I'm hearing you on the input, but not through the machine. And the machine's about to go off. Fascinating sounding design. Yeah, we got to discuss that more. Antennas are a fun subject, so come join us next week, Barry. Roger, Dodger. Hearing you beautifully on the input, but not through the machine. Bye-bye, Barry.
I think I found my tone. Now you hear me through the machine, right?
Now I'm hearing you through the machine. You sound good.
Okay, too much playing around the radio. See you next week. Have a great night. N2MB.
You need some more knobs.
Oh, Lord, I've got enough of them now.
Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight. tonight at 8:30. WQVL repeater system. The time is 5:50 a.m. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. Good morning.
Able to pick stuff up like that, but I guess my ears didn't wake up. So, no, you don't have that, it's not that long. I'm sure you'll be a better. Gate over to you, KC2KX, KN2EB.
What flight was it?
It was the Yudishi Nephew, and what part did they play? The little one played Mary with the blue veil. And the old one she plays the flute, and the middle one plays clarinet. The little one had a little bit of a smoke. The concert was that, music wise, and also the littlest ones, I guess one was in kindergarten. They had like a little skit going on. It was okay. It was good. Keith, back to you, and you do sound a heck of a lot better. Audio's coming in.
Oh, I see that radio on low power. Which I didn't realize. My wife must have done it by accident, or I don't know, maybe I did it, I have no idea. Oh, so I looked down and she's low. Wow. So they have three children in Catholic school. Wow, that's impressive. So pretty impressive, thank you.
Yeah, I'm surprised. And she just moved out to Big Hill. So, when she was living in East Meadows, she had been campus school there, but must be a lot of. You know, I sent my son to Chaminade, and it was killing me. And then I sent my daughter to Kellenberg, and I was happy that she got out of that. Like, a lot of relief now. And of course, they always, then Kappa comes along and they ask you for money, more money anyway. Sometimes, like, it feels like you never stop paying, even though the kids are long gone out of their school.
Now, what's the going rate these days for a school like that? Where you can stay by the school for a whole year? How does that work out? What's the status of something like that? It's gotta be, probably around, what, 10 grand per year?
Well, I was paying about 4 to 45. Now, I don't know if it's like, deal with it. You're paying a lot of money. And they have no money to begin with, you know? His business is going down due to some restrictions that the town imposed on him, kind of Mineola. So I don't know what they're going to do. That's wild. But it's got to be a lot better than regular school. I'll tell you. My oldest son went to public school, and that's why sent my younger son and daughter to a Catholic school. There's just too much nonsense going on.
You're terrible, you think so much of that. You're all like all popcorn and everything. The audio's, you know, okay. Definitely not at the bar, for sure.